today we're going to discuss marriage as a parenting tool. You know, marriage is probably the most important parenting tool that you are currently employing with your children. Your children live and breathe and absorb your marriage into their very cells. They will seek a spouse and live their lives based on what they're learning in your marriage. Even more important than how you deal directly with them, the indirect learning that they acquire from watching you and your spouse affects the way they view love, relationships, intimacy. It shows them and teaches them everything that they're going to know when leaving your home about commitment, responsibility, caring, and all of the skills that go into making intimate relationships work or not work. Whether you are currently married to your spouse or not doesn't matter. The relationship is what matters. It's what your children see when you and your spouse are talking to each other, interacting with each other, or dealing with each other about anything, anytime. Wouldn't you love to give your kids the gift of lasting love in their lives? You have to give them skills in order to equip them to have that gift. Little kids are not born knowing the skills that will make their adult relationships successful. They're going to learn them from you. Now, we are interacting with our marital partners or ex-marital partners all the time, but we're not necessarily doing so with parent consciousness in mind. Let's take the unconscious or subconscious routines that we are engaged in and make them conscious, so that we can decide what we want to offer our kids. Let's say that we end up fighting with our partner. Well, that happens. We get angry. We lose our tempers. We say the wrong things. It kind of just happens, not because we plan it that way. We don't wake up in the morning thinking, I'm really in the mood for a great fight with my partner today. It kind of happens to us subconsciously, unconsciously. We fall into that routine again and again and again. And our children fall into it with us. Our children hear our interactions. Unless you're having an interaction with your spouse when your kids are in school, out of the house, out of town, or something like that, you can figure that they are hearing and overhearing what's going on, even when you think that they're sleeping or that they're busy or that they're in another room. They are getting it completely. Now, if you and your partner fall into a lot of arguments, just by way of example here, your kids are not only learning how to argue, because that's the model you're providing, they are also failing to learn how not to argue, because that isn't the model that you are providing. So when we teach our children the wrong thing, we're kind of harming them in two ways. One, by teaching them the wrong thing by our model, actually giving them the wrong instructions, and also by failing to give them the right instructions, so that they have a deficit, a gap, in their knowledge base about how to make a relationship work. Now, we're not perfect. We ourselves have gaps. You know, we come from homes that have gaps. We inherit gaps. We create our own gaps. And, you know, we don't always do things perfectly. But if we're doing most of it subconsciously, unconsciously, out of awareness, without awareness, then, you know, we're just going to mess along for 20 years while we're raising our kids and just not do the best we can. Let's become more conscious, more aware of the areas in which we want to function well in order to give ourselves and our children the best opportunities. We're going to look at 7 different areas today of intimate interactions, the kind of interactions that make committed marital relationships work? Now, we might pause here and say, do we want our children to have committed marital relationships, long-term, lasting, loving marriages? Or is that a thing of the past? You know, it's hard to attain that these days because our society has changed so dramatically. Divorce is so available and so easy, so accessible, that many marriages do not make it to the final end, you know, to death do them part. So people sometimes don't even expect that that's a reasonable goal. Our religion, Judaism, teaches us that marriage is not only a reasonable goal, one that every person should strive to achieve, but one that is a healthy and desirable goal from the viewpoint of our personal development. Marriage forces us to grow up or to suffer pain. You know, our immaturity and our gaps or whatever it is, our weaknesses, whatever we're missing in marriage will hurt. It's going to hurt ourselves. It's going to hurt our spouses. It might hurt our children as well. And so we're sort of pressured or pushed or forced to heal ourselves, to become more mature, to learn new tricks and new techniques, exercise new options in order to feel better. Not only to feel less pain, but to feel more love. And all this work is called growth. And the whole point of our existence here on Earth is to keep growing, to become wiser, more mature, more compassionate, more loving, better and better and better as we age. Marriage will help us do this. Not only will marriage help us grow, but marriage has been shown to be good for our health. When we are able to have long-lasting marriages, we have a secure base from which to accomplish everything we want to accomplish in life. Divorce and family disruption is stressful for every member of the family. A stable, loving marriage provides a background that is not stressful, but that is supportive, that allows us to do the best that we can in all areas of our lives. Marriages are good for our physical health, for our mental health, for our emotional health, when they work. That is, when they feel loving and supportive, when we're being kind to each other. So a good marriage works wonders, and you know, we want our children to have that because it's their best option for an overall successful life on every level. So let's look at these seven areas and see what we're doing and what we want to show our children. The first area is an ability to show affection. What I'm asking you to do here today is to rate yourself on your ability to show affection. Do you express it verbally to your spouse? Do you say, I love you? Can your kids hear you saying, I love you? Or expressing, I love you in a written card, or a note, or a gift, or in physical touch, or in acts of kindness? There's so many ways to show affection. Compliments, appreciation, words of thanks. Do your kids hear you say it to each other and to them? Look, do you see that Dad fixed the fence like we asked him to? Isn't that great? You can make that comment to a child. Or you can make it to Dad directly. Oh, thanks, honey, for fixing that fence. I really appreciate it. Oh, you're welcome, sweetheart, and thank you for that lovely dinner you made just, you know, a few hours ago. That was terrific, etc. Do you guys talk to each other like that in a way, not phony like that, but you know what I mean? Like really thanking each other. Do you thank each other? Do you kiss each other? Do you greet each other when you come in? Hi, honey, how was your day? You know, do you make a point to say goodbye to each other and wish each other all the best on as you're seeing each other out the door? Do your children hear this? How do your kids know that you and your partner love each other? Now, how are you showing that? What I want you to do is give yourself a number between 1 and 10 that indicates how good you think you are at showing affection. If you think you're great at that, then give yourself a 10. If you think you're so-so, give yourself a 5. If you think you have room for improvement, give yourself a 2 or 1 or 3, whatever you think you need to do. Now, you can also give your spouse a number, just how good you think your spouse is at showing affection to you. And then you could ask your spouse later on to rate you as well, and to rate him or herself. And then you can compare all these numbers. So let's say I think I'm terrific at showing affection, and I'll give myself a 9 or a 10. But I think my spouse has a way to go, so I'll give him a 4. Later on, I ask him to rate his ability, what he thinks he has as an ability to give affection. And it turns out that he rates himself a 7, even though I gave him a 4. And he rates me a 5, even though I gave myself a 9. Then we can have a little discussion, okay? We can work on this together and see, you know, what is the difference for our ratings and what might we have to do to communicate better to each other. So you can use this rating not only to enhance your parenting, but also to enhance your marriage. Let's look at the next ability that we need in a marriage, which is, and these are not in any particular order, by the way, they're just different abilities that, you know, marriage needs, the ability to handle responsibility. Now, this ability normally begins to develop in kids between the ages of 6 and 10. And in childhood, handling responsibility involves things like remembering to bring homework home and doing it independently and taking it back to school, you know, without having somebody supervise all that. In marriage, responsibility involves doing whatever a spouse is supposed to do. Hold down a job, run a house, look after the children, do carpool, get up in the morning, fulfill commitments and promises and spiritual obligations, all without needing to be reminded or supervised. Can you do all that on your own? Or does somebody have to nag you to get it done? Or does somebody have to do it for you? Rate yourself on how responsible you think you are. Give yourself a number between 1 and 10. If you think you're really super responsible and very independent, that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, what your spouse expects you to be doing, and what you expect yourself to be doing, if you're doing it all, give yourself a 10. If you do some of it but not all of it, look around the 5 or 6 mark. And if you do like one thing but many, many things are not really being done, you're behind on getting those taxes done, you leave piles of dishes in the sink and, you know, you don't sort your papers and everything is behind, you know, things that are your responsibility, give yourself a 1 or 2. And then rate your partner. And have your partner rate you. Then have that little discussion. Remember that you are modeling responsibility for your children. In the showing affection one that we just looked at a few moments ago, the way you show affection to your spouse is a lesson to your children on how to show affection. You know, people grow up and they say, "Oh, I never heard my dad give my mom a compliment." Or, "I never heard my mother or saw my mother, you know, saying affectionate things to my dad or, you know, being tender towards him. I just never saw that. And so I don't know how to do it." See, here's the big problem, right? If a kid never sees it, they may not know how to do it. And this may cause problems for them in their own grown-up relationships. Same thing with responsibility. "Well, you know, we were never very good at that at home. I mean, you know, my father was really disorganized. My mother was, you know, never there. And so nobody really got things done. And nobody saw to it that I got things done. And I really don't know how to get things done." Now imagine unleashing one of your children onto some innocent person, right? And your child, well, let's say in your house, you never got up. You never wake up by yourself. Somebody has to wake you up. And your kids also, you know, learn while they can't get up. They see you sleeping in late every morning, or they see that your spouse has to wake you up every morning, and they copy you. not your spouse, right? So they don't get up, and somebody has to wake them up. And that goes on for, 18, 20 years. They leave your home, eventually get married. And now their spouse has to wake them up. And their spouse is not happy about it, and this causes a fight every morning of their life for the next 50 years, if they last that long through it. Your deficits can be passed on to your children, causing them aggravation and pain in their lives. And that's not the gift you want to give, probably. So we have to work on ourselves, become conscious that the way I show responsibility, the way I show affection, is a lesson to my children. Let's look at the third ability required in marriage, the ability to manage money. Now, this ability begins around age 9 in regular kids, and it involves in children the ability to save their money, to set aside some money for charity, and to spend their money appropriately. In adulthood, the skill involves running a household budget based on their income and setting aside money for charity and for savings. People who lack this skill may chronically overspend or acquire debt or gamble, or they don't know about their own financial situation, or they don't allocate their funds appropriately. Financial mismanagement, as you know, can be a source of tremendous stress, conflict, and suffering in marriage. How are your children going to learn how to manage money? What are you showing them about money? What are you telling them? How are you educating them? Rate your money management skills, your own personal money management skills, between 1 and 10. If you've got this under your belt and you're very responsible with your dollars, you know how to make them, keep them, save them, share them, give yourself a 10. But if you have trouble in this area, or you just don't even know about this area, it's not anything that you deal with, give yourself a much lower score, right down somewhere, 0 or 1 or something. Just give yourself a score and then rate your partner's ability to manage money. And then have your partner rate himself or herself and you. And have a little talk about that after. The fourth area that we're going to look at is an ability to manage anger. Now, the ability to manage anger develops around age 5 as a child learns to put more words to feelings and uses the words instead of more dramatic bodily expressions of unhappiness or aggravation. In adulthood, this skill involves the use of calming emotion, anticipating consequences of our behavior and our words, choosing appropriate occasions and times for communicating displeasure, and using sensitive verbal communication, that is, we're going to think before we speak, and to keep relationship goals in mind as we settle issues. People who lack the anger management skill may operate something like toddlers. They stamp their feet, they make faces, they use gestures, they scream or throw things or threaten or slam doors or hang up and all that dramatic stuff. Now, other people may not be dramatic, but if they don't have the use of their words, they may, they may say hurtful things, they may be insulting, or they may use vile language when they're frustrated or upset. And some people, having even less use of words, completely withdraw when they're angry. They just stop talking, they cease to engage, and they stonewall for hours or days or weeks, or in some dysfunctional families, for even longer. So all of those ways of showing anger, expressing anger, are going to be very destructive of love. Now, how are you doing with your anger management skills? When you're upset, do you have a way to calm yourself down? Do you have a way to get yourself into a mode where you can discuss an upsetting issue with sensitivity and with respect consistently, pretty well every time that you need to? Or do you find yourself saying and doing hurtful things, whether they're loud ones or whether they're quiet ones? How do you handle your anger? Is your way of handling anger with your spouse something that you would be proud to see your children do? Do you think your way will enhance their lives and their own intimate marriages and relationships. If you think so, give yourself a 10, right? If you think that your way of handling anger brings more love and more happiness into your life and therefore will bring lots of love and happiness into your kids' life, give yourself a 10. If you think that you have some room for improvement, you're pretty good, but, you know, sometimes you goof it up or say hurtful things or do something that's not so great, look around the 5 or 6 mark. And if you're wreaking havoc in your own marriage by the inappropriate use of anger as a communication tool, then look a lot lower, give yourself a low score, and be cautious, because your children are learning how to destroy their relationships from watching you use those kinds of techniques. Have your spouse give a rating for him or herself and for you. Also rate your spouse and have a little talk about it. Let's look at another skill, the ability to be neat. Okay, the ability to be neat is something that marriage partners need to have because they live together in a shared space. Little kids around 4 or 5 years old can put away their toys sometimes without being reminded to. And as they get older, they should get better and better at this. Adults who have this ability can put their clothes in a laundry basket instead of leaving them on the floor or the bed, right? They can clear their plates off the table instead of leaving them there. They can wash dishes that they've used. They can organize their papers in appropriate desks and drawers, etc. They can contribute to the cleanliness of shared household spaces and keep things clean and functional. The ability to be neat is not the same as being a neat freak. That is somebody who makes everybody else's life miserable by insisting that every, you know, dust speck is picked up and, you know, being just too tense about the whole thing. Okay, we're talking about having an attitude that is pleasant, but having a skill that is functional to keep the home neat and organized without it being unduly pressured or tense. So we could be too messy or too neat, really, and impact negatively on our partner. So take a look at your own style of functioning. Realize that if you're very, very messy, and, you know, chances, unless you've married a very, very messy spouse, and sometimes even if you have married a very messy spouse, usually if you're very messy, your partner will be very aggravated. It causes a lot of conflict in a marriage if you cannot keep up to a sort of normal standard of neatness. And if you're very, very, very neat, you can also cause a conflict because there's too much pressure that you're putting on your partner. So, you know, if you want to reduce conflict, you just want to be normal, sort of relaxed and comfortable and functional in this area. So rate yourself on how well you think you're doing in this area between 0 and 10. And if you're able to keep things in order, you know where to find things, you clean up after yourself, you don't make people do a whole lot for you, you're kind of independently cleaning up, then give yourself a high score. If you see room for improvement, do something around the middle. And if you've really got a problem in this area, you know it because your spouse has been complaining for a long time, then give yourself a lower score and think about your kids, right? What are they learning from watching you? Will it serve them well in their marriages? How do you want to improve so that you can give them the skills they need for a happy life? Now, there's another ability. We'll call it the ability to take care of yourself. Self-care. That is, your ability to hop into the shower by yourself, you know, at a daily or, you know, time of kind of a schedule that will keep you clean and fresh, right? That you keep yourself attractive, healthy. See, let's put it this way. Adults who lack this skill end up being either unattractive or unhealthy or both, right? They may indulge in various health-threatening addictions, or they neglect their grooming, or they neglect to exercise or eat properly, or they somehow lead an unhealthy lifestyle, whatever, failing to maintain healthy and attractive standards. And the result is going to be a frustrated or anxious or critical or disappointed spouse. It's going to cause tension and conflict in your relationship if you cannot present yourself for the whole relationship as an attractive, you know, healthy, clean person. When we let ourselves go, we're letting our spouse down. What kind of model are you showing your kids? When they look at you, are they learning how to keep up this end of the marriage to make themselves healthy and attractive and vibrant as long as they are fortunate enough to live with another person? So, are they learning this from you? Give yourself a 10 if you think they are, a 5 if there's room for improvement, and a lower score if you're doing dismally in this area. Rate your spouse, and have your spouse rate him or herself and you, and have a little talk. Now, there's actually, I said we're going to do 7, but maybe we'll do 2 more. We'll do 8 skills. There's probably lots more, but we're just looking at a cross-section here. So let's look at the ability to manage stress. Because, you know, everyone is affected by stress. And life is stressful all the time. Sometimes more stressful on a given day or more stressful on a given year, you know. But there's always stress there. It is your responsibility to handle your stress independently, right? To take care of yourself so that you don't become overwhelmed or excessively irritable or sad or down or depressed. That's up to you. Now, there's lots of techniques that you can use to help keep yourself in a balanced mood, a pleasant enough mood that your spouse will want to live with you, right? That'll be pleasant to live with you. So stress management techniques can include a wide range of activities like reducing your workload or increasing the time that you take for fun and relaxation or getting more sleep, doing more exercise, seeking professional counseling or religious support, consulting a naturopath or a medical practitioner, having more time to talk to or socialize with friends, improve your diet. All sorts of things can be done, but they're up to you to do it. Whatever it is, are you doing it well enough so that you are generally in a good mood more days than not? Would you say that your mood is balanced despite the fact that life is hard? Because nobody can do this for you except you. If your mood is coming out pretty good, and I don't mean at the office when you're away from home. I mean at home in the evening, at the end of your day, when your family is going to see you, right? In the morning rush, getting out the door, and at the end of the day, when you're tired again, how is your mood then? Are you pleasant, upbeat, a pleasure to be around? Because your spouse will find you a pleasure to be around if you are, right? But if you're crabby, irritable, just, you know, often in a bad mood because your stress is not being well managed, then your marriage will suffer and your children will have a very poor model to emulate. So rate yourself between 0 and 10 on this. Rate your spouse and have your spouse rate him or herself and rate you and have that little talk. And the last point that we'll look at today, is ability to share and negotiate. If you're going to live together, you have to be able to share and negotiate. Some people can't do this very well. They have the my way or the highway philosophy that little toddlers have, but we find it doesn't work so well in marriage. People who lack the ability to share and negotiate, they try to dominate or call the shots. They drown out the spouse and kind of run the show. They're what the spouse might call a control freak. Now, it's hard for us to identify this trait in ourselves because it's hard for us to notice that we are controlling or pushy or stamping on other people's feelings. But if you've ever been called this by your spouse, then it's a hint that maybe you're in this department, right? Maybe if your spouse uses that word controlling on you, you know, you should consider, well, maybe I am a little bit too pushy here. Another way for you to know whether or not you're controlling is to simply ask your spouse, Do you feel that you get what you want at least half the time around here? Like, do you get half the dinners that you want? Do you get to pick half the vacations? Do you feel like we're going places where you want to go? Do you feel like when we go out, for entertainment, that you get to pick it at least half the time? Do you feel that your voice is being heard? And if your spouse says, actually, now that you ask, no, then you know that you've been kind of hijacking the show there and everything's been going your way, right? On the other hand, you may know that nothing goes your way and that you're always sacrificing to your spouse. You may feel like you give up and give in almost all the time. In a healthy relationship, you want to give up and give in 50% of the time, and your spouse really needs to do the same. To be reasonable, to be flexible, and to compromise. Rate yourself on how good you think you are doing at this, and rate yourself on how you think rate your partner and how well you think your partner's doing on this. Have your partner rate him or herself and you, and have a discussion. This one will be particularly interesting, I think, when you go to talk about it and see how it's coming out. But remember, it's your children who are watching and learning. Do they see that one of you is always getting his or her way? What lesson does that teach them about being both in charge and being a victim? What lesson do you want them to have? Think about it and change it if you need to. These are just some of the ways that your personal interactions are affecting not only you, but also your kids for a lifetime. Let's make it conscious. Live the kind of life that you think will give your kids a head start in theirs. And let's all be happy together.